An enormous amount of time, money, effort, and good intentions goes into scientific research, but all too often the results aren't effectively communicated. The goal of Beyond the Jargon is to make academic research more accessible to a wider audience. I'm Dr. Karen Albright. I hope you'll join me for a series of conversations designed to translate scientific research and to explore, from a data-driven perspective, the impacts of child abuse on our psychological, family, healthcare, criminal justice, and social systems. Come with me, Beyond the Jargon. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the sixth episode of Beyond the Jargon. I'm Karen Albright, your host, and I am so pleased to be welcoming our guest today. Stephen Groover is the Director of Social Services for the Salvation Army of Wake County in North Carolina. And Stephen strives to promote a safe and welcoming environment for the families and individuals served within many programs that the Salvation Army has there, including a family emergency shelter. Stephen spent the last 10 years in various communities across the U.S. in efforts to help end homelessness, and he currently serves as Wake County's Continuum of Care Board's vice chair, where he assists to coordinate services for all Wake County residents who are experiencing homelessness. So that's really impressive. And Stephen, I'm looking forward to hearing about that today. But in fact, I'd love to start our discussion by letting our audience get to know you a bit. And I'd also like to, if you would share a little bit about the organization you work at, where you are, as I just mentioned, the Director of Social Services. So what can you tell us about Wake County Salvation Army?
Yeah, so Salvation Army in Wake County has been around about 135 years. So we're an old nonprofit.
Yeah, it sounds like one of the originals, maybe.
That's right. OG. But we do a lot of work here in Wake County, you know, serving those who are on the margins in the community. The mission for Salvation Army as a whole is to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ and meet human need without discrimination. We really try to focus on the without discrimination part and, you know, just trying to help those in Wake County who are in need of help.
And what about you? How did you personally come to this kind of work?
Yeah, I actually came a little bit around about compared to most people that I met.
Those are the stories I like, Stephen. Right.
When I was in Chicago for undergrad, I volunteered with an organization called Frontlines Ministry that worked with individuals experiencing homelessness on the street and really just developed a lot of really amazing relationships, friendships for people, and realized there's not a whole lot different between my situation and their situation other than the fact that I had family to fall back on many times and just really opened my eyes to kind of what we do.
That's so humbling. Actually, I really appreciate that you said that. I've had that thought many times too, that the margins can be so thin sometimes. And, you know, what's that saying, there but for the grace of God go I? There are,
yes.
We've all been in tough spots, and having that safety net that some of us have of families or social systems that can help us makes all the difference. So I really appreciate that you noticed that too and said that too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I moved to California when I finished up school and did an internship with an organization working with various different groups that serve people who are on the margins, and just kind of fell in love with the work. And now it's become a career, and chased the career portion of it as well to be able to help people. So
I love that. And how did you go from California to North Carolina?
That's a great question. I actually, you know, worked for a few different agencies while I was in Santa Barbara, California. And then my wife was a teacher, a teaching fellow here in North Carolina. And so we decided, hey, do we want to pay back $50,000 in student loans or move to North Carolina? So we chose Raleigh.
Yeah, that sounds like that you made a good choice. I appreciate that. Also, the Raleigh-Durham area is so beautiful. I'm no expert, but the times I've been there, I've just fallen in love with it.
Yes, it's an amazing area. We moved here thinking we'd move back, and we've been here 8 years. So it's been
nice.
A while.
Nice. Well, you know, obviously the Salvation Army has done a lot of great work over the more than a century, as you just said, that it's been in existence. And I think a lot of people are pretty familiar, at least with some of the work that it does. But I don't know that our listeners maybe is familiar with how some of that work has been about acting in the best interests of children. And, you know, the purpose of our podcast is to explain and disseminate scientific research and good work that people are doing in a variety of domains, but with this particular focus on child abuse and neglect and just child welfare more generally. Could you tell us a little bit about how that intersects with what the Salvation Army does?
Yeah, that's a great question, and definitely affects, I feel like, most areas of social work in general. All of our programs are developed through a trauma-informed lens. So we understand, you know, most of our families that or and individuals that we're serving have experienced trauma, and that trauma has affected their health outcomes, their circumstances, and specifically childhood trauma. So we focus a lot on adverse childhood experiences or ACEs and how those are affecting health outcomes for individuals and in developmental outcomes. We focus a lot in a couple of our programs on those two areas, specifically our Project Catch program. That stands for Community Action Targeting Children or Homeless. That program focuses on individuals and families who are in the community who are experiencing homelessness and the kids, and they do developmental screenings with the children to see kind of where they're at developmentally, and then work to kind of help them to booster their network and really trying to help those children catch up to where they need to be at. And then we focus a lot through our shelter program as well. We have a dedicated child case manager that helps mediate the effects of trauma that kids are facing while they're experiencing homelessness, because we understand that homelessness in and of itself is a traumatic event. And so how do we help to mediate some of those situations for the families?
And that's so interesting that you say that. So how might one mediate, or how do you mediate the effect of homelessness? What goes into that?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. Obviously, it's very complex, and I'll try my best to break down some of those ways. But we focus a lot on the five protective factors to prevent child abuse. One of those would be social and emotional competence of children. So we'll work with, you know, kids doing coaching or screenings, like I said, like the Brigant screening or Ages and Stages, you know, different screenings that are helping us realize where a child is at developmentally. And then we're going to help connect them to resources to catch them up developmentally. So whether it's coordinating with school social workers, with their teachers, with attending their IEPs with them, or just coaching the parent on some of those parenting techniques, that's one of the factors that we would focus on and help booster the family's involvement in that. And there's a few other factors that's just one of the ways that we would work with the family in those areas.
That's incredible. God, what meaningful work. I mean, really, I'm very impressed by that. I'm not surprised that you stayed 8 years, even beyond Raleigh's attractions. It's incredible and meaningful work. It also sounds difficult. It must be not only difficult in terms of making strides against this very large and significant problem, but you know, it's so complicated, right? And it must be, I'm sure people are, I mean, this is the most obvious thing to say, but people are struggling so much, and it must be really difficult to see people in that situation, and maybe particularly children who are kind of along for the ride.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the hardest part, I feel like, in the work a lot of times is the factors that are so large that take kind of a community's approach to. It's not that just something you can change overnight, but creates like, it needs policy change and communal change, society change. What's the quote? It takes a village, right? Like it takes a whole community to change some of the factors that our families are facing that are just environmental factors that are affecting their child's welfare and their ability to parent and the opportunities that their child has ultimately.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you see a wide range, I assume, of children, you know, from babies on up to teenagers, or is it more concentrated in certain pediatric groups?
So nationally, homelessness typically is around 0 to 6 is the mass majority of families who are experiencing homelessness have children within that range. Hmm. I think an obvious factor would be childcare, right? That's affecting their homelessness.
Absolutely.
In and of itself. So that's usually about like 60% of the families that we see typically have kids within that age range. But yes, we see the full gamut gambit of families, with teenagers, with middle schoolers. One thing that we've noticed in our shelter a lot of times is the stigma around homelessness. So a lot of times, you know, when kids get to be teenagers, they look to other family or friends or opportunities that they might have outside of their nuclear family for places to stay rather than entering maybe a shelter or something like that.
Yeah, I can imagine. But gosh, that age, that young age, you know, you said 0 to 6, just, such a precious time. That's, I mean, all of it is delicate and precious, but oh my goodness, thinking about the young children and what they're going through. And then sounds like though you also witness them building resiliency in moments too, like even just describing that the teenagers will often look for other options and explore different alternatives.
Yeah. And, you know, when you think about the 0 to 6 range, too, when you're looking at a lot of the developmental stages for children, just normal developmental, 0 to 6 is some of the most crucial times for children as they're developing. And so we really try to focus in on that. But yeah, the resilience is absolutely amazing. They have a couple beautiful films now focusing on adverse childhood experiences. And they show just the fact that if there's consistent relationships with those children, sometimes they can overcome a lot of those barriers just by having one person even in their life who's consistently a good influence, who's around them, that's giving them opportunities and care. It truly is amazing seeing them overcome a lot of those barriers.
Yeah, I bet. I'm inspired even just listening to that. You mentioned too that some among some of the supports that you give to families and children as part of the shelter program and the work more broadly, it sounds like too, is that, did you say you work with parents as well in some capacities?
Yeah, we do a lot.
Can you say a little bit about what you do? Is it, you know, around parenting, for instance? Is it around job skills? What kind of things do you focus on that can help them and ultimately help their families?
Yeah, all of the above. I think people often don't realize how many environmental factors affect like something like child abuse or things like that. You know, as a family has further stressors, there's going to be things that affect them. So we focus a lot with our families on helping to booster those, right? So we're going to work with them on employment training, on education, on any of the goals that they're setting for themselves and helping them kind of overcome those barriers. We also do parenting support groups. So we'll have, we have a support group started by Prevent Child Abuse America called Circle of Parents. Mm-hmm. And that group specifically focuses on individuals who are experiencing homelessness and parenting strategies that they can utilize while they're in those situations and take with them after those situations. And it's just a really cool environment where it's strength-based and the family gets an opportunity to discuss some of their specific circumstances that are affecting their parenting and how to overcome that, just like we need, you know, through our communities and our cultures. So
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm a perfect parent without any kind of help or support. So, but I assume maybe
every
that's not true.
Feels that way, right?
I am absolutely lying. That is, I am not a perfect parent. And I'm also grateful for the supports that I have. But it truly, it sounds like you all are doing such important work there on at all levels too, you know, with working with the parents, working with the children, working to engage the larger community and partner, it sounds like with other entities in the community to do as much of a surround support system as possible.
Yeah, I'm curious, call it a trauma-informed network, right? We want everybody to realize.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's no, I mean, how fitting, right? I appreciated your comment before, it takes a village. Absolutely. I think it takes a village to do anything these days, practically, right? Yeah. And certainly anything that is meaningful and in the face of these kind of seemingly intractable problems, the multifaceted problems. Do you work closely? I think you mentioned, you know, educational aspects of this, but do you work closely with your particular school systems, or is it kind of, how do you focus that educational work to support the children?
That's a great question. So for our shelter specifically, we work with the school systems that our families are already connected to. There's a legislation, it's called McKinney-Vento Act. And what it does, it allows families who are in transition, such as homelessness, to be able to continue to access the school that they were at previously so that there's not a lot of changes for the children. They're able to have that consistency that we know children thrive with and all of those things. And so we coordinate a ton with the school social workers around the McKinney-Vento regulations and allowing our kids to continue to be able to access transportation to school, their base school, all of the resources that are available to them, such as like free and reduced lunch, so that the kids can kind of have this continuous wraparound services for their education. And we coordinate a lot with the school social workers in regards to those.
That's great. And I'm curious, you know, the idea here with this podcast is not exclusively, but there is a lot to explaining scientific research, or you know, how exploring how people use research or data in the good work that they do. So I'm curious how you all incorporate that. It sounds like your approach to all these things is so thoughtful and multifaceted. Do you incorporate or research or data in your work?
I really do believe like data is the true guiding factor to see if our practices are working in some ways. Obviously, you know, data can't tell a story necessarily. And so there is like a balance of both, but we use many different factors to gauge our success, especially in regards to our shelter program and all of our programs. But we might look at things like length of time homeless, exits into permanent housing, lease renewals, enrollments and benefit programs. And it helps us kind of stay true to our values as a program as well. So for instance, one of our values as a program is every day homeless is a day too many. So if every day homeless is a day too many, then our value in our data is going to show that our length of time homelessness is getting lower and lower. Ultimately, that would be our goal, right? If it's not showing that, why? Why are we as an agency not seeing reductions in our length of time homeless? Is it because of environmental factors? How do we address those environmental factors? So data has a huge portion in driving our outcomes and how do we get better? We publish that data publicly because we want our community to hold us accountable to getting better and better as we do this work. And I think that's important as well for all people who are in this field to make sure that we have that accountability to a community as well.
That's such a good point, and I really appreciate that. Where do you publish it?
On our website. We do often. We utilize it through what's called our system performance measures that, you know, anytime we're writing a grant or things like that, people are looking at those system performance measures, but we keep them pretty up to date on our website.
Yeah, that's great. And I actually, this would be a great time for you to drop the website URL, if you would. Can you share that with our listeners in case they want
to
check out?
Yes, I will. It is southernusa.salvationarmy.org/wake.
Wake is in WAKE, like Wake.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, Wake County.
Wake County. Okay, excellent. Okay, good. I'm glad you said that because some of our listeners may want to indeed check out what kind of data you use and track and then display. I think that's so important. And do you? It sounds like the data that you're talking about right now is largely essentially evaluation data, right? You're evaluating how well your programs are working and various statistics or other kind of tracking measures to chart that. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
What about data? Do you draw on research or other kind of data, even if it's not, you know, generated by you, but other research or information out there in order to help construct your programs?
Yes, that's a great question. I really do believe, you know, there's no need to reinvent the wheel a lot of times in these type of things. We do a lot of research and presentations to all our programs on national best practices. So we might use resources like the National Alliance in Homelessness or Community Solutions or things like that that are doing this on a federal level and being able to look at best practices on a local level. And then we would take information like that and look at how does that apply to our community specifically and how do we utilize some of that data to help drive some our practices and what are we going to adjust to be able to make sure that we're doing that.
I love that. I'm curious, this is sort of a funny question because I think there's some similarities and differences in what I'm about to ask across organizations everywhere, but I'm curious what your process is within your organization for when you're developing programs and charting your progress or, you know, how effective they are essentially. What's your process for change within that? I mean, is it, you know, a group of you sitting around being like, well, the data say this, you know, I don't know, something, something, something. And then, you know, we have to change it. Or is it I don't know, is it more gradual than that? I'm just curious how it works there.
No, that's a great question. Are you talking more program specifically or
I guess
broader.
so.
It could be
Yeah,
both.
it could be both. Either whichever one seems most pertinent.
Okay,
I don't know
sounds
at
good.
what level the decisions, typically
No,
happen.
that's great. Yeah, on our program specifically, honestly, we're a pretty fluid agency on the program specifically. And the reason I say that is I really do believe programs have to be able to adjust to what they're seeing every day, right? So an example of that would be like for our shelter program, twice annually, we do focus groups. We involve all of our residents who have been through our shelter, the ones who are currently in our shelter, and we might get a lot of feedback. Right on that focus group. And then we would adjust our program, hopefully immediately based off of some of the feedback that we might do. Obviously, there still would be discussion amongst, the case managers and everyone involved in the program to see if that still aligns with national best practices and our grants and things like that to be able to adjust to it. But the program should be serving the people, right? That's the ultimate goal, is that it's doing the most good for those people. And so how do we be nimble enough to adjust as we need to arrive rising situations for people, but also following, national best practices, making sure that we're able to gauge if that adjustment was effective or not effective. And so there's a lot of regular conversations about that type of things, but we tried mostly to benchmark it towards like a couple times annually so that we can make big adjustments. And then we can gauge whether those were effective or not, and then make it back if we need to, I guess.
I love that you just used the word nimble because honestly, I was sitting here listening to you thinking that word was in my mind. And I've never used this term before. I'm making it up right here, but I think I had nimbleness envy because,
Yes.
in the academic world, we are not nearly as nimble, unfortunately. And so to hear you be able to work in essentially real time, to get feedback and I love, by the way, that you use focus groups as part of your way to collect information. But you get this information and then that you can assess it pretty quickly and then you can importantly apply it to be, to make the changes that they suggest. I just love that. How, and like I said, you heard it here first, everybody. Nimbleness envy. That's what I have. Nimbleness envy.
Nimbleness in B. I love that. I'm going to coin that somewhere else.
You should put that on the web page. That's what you
There
should
we
do.
go. That'll
And
be our quote.
yeah, exactly. But you, right, exactly. I have nimbleness envy and you can attribute that to me. How about that?
There
Here
we
and all day.
go.
There you go.
You heard it first.
That's right. That's right. Well, Stephen, this is so great to hear about what you're doing. And before we go, I just want to check in with what the next steps are. What do you hope or envision that your organization or others like it will do next to continue this kind of good work? And obviously you're in this very powerful kind of role for change as the director of social services. So what's next for you and what do you hope will happen?
Yeah, I think in some ways it's a laundry list, right, of things that
Right.
we envision for each of our programs and ways that we can make it better. But I think ultimately I've been really encouraged these last few years of agencies like ours and other agencies coming up with creative solutions that are a little bit outside the box to help address some of these issues, but that are really getting to the root of solving the problem. We always say we don't want to do band-aid effects. We don't want to just, put something over that's just sustaining and we want to treat the whole person as a holistic approach. And how do we help address issues like that? So I think for a lot of our programs, we're going to continue to analyze what that is for each individual. When we look at, children who are experiencing homelessness, how are we helping to address the full scope of their need, right? From their trauma to their housing instability to their food instability, how are we helping to address all of those? And so I think we'll continue to do that, and we'll continue to look at new programs that we can incorporate that are meeting the need of Wake County as a whole.
Well, that sounds great to me. It sounds like you're doing really good work. And I'm so pleased that you have been able to share a little bit about that work with me and with the listeners of Beyond the Jargon. Stephen, thank you so much for being here. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. It was wonderful.